Now, from the clothes on your back to the smartphone in your hand, these goods, with a few exceptions, likely traveled to the United States from other countries. Before they get to your favorite store or web distributor, they arrive in a port, where cargo is then transferred to a warehouse or rail yard by port truckers in the Los Angeles area.
And a new investigation from USA Today found that these crucial workers face some of the worst working conditions in the country, ranging from low pay to long hours and more. Even worse, our next guest says that these drivers face a sort of modern-day indentured servitude to the companies they work for.
Brett Murphy joins us now. He's an investigative reporter for the USA Today Network. Brett, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks, guys.
What first brought you into investigating this story?
Well, it was when the longshoremen were striking on the West Coast about 2 years ago. I was kind of walking around doing some reporting around local businesses, and I was talking to truck drivers, and I found out that they were owing their boss money at the end of the week because they weren't able to turn enough containers, and they're paid by container, and they're all in a kind of weekly debt to their own employer, and sometimes they don't make it into the black, and they actually owe their boss money, and that's what kind of got me started pulling that thread.
Before we dig deeper into the working conditions and the financial arrangements, talk about this lifeline of the American economy, the trucks that connect ports with distribution centers. How much of what we buy online or in stores is coming through these trucks?
So about half. Pretty much anything made in the Pacific Rim, so clothes, electronics, furniture, car parts, about half of it is coming through L.A., Long Beach, Oakland. And it's really just the first leg of the supply chain here stateside. So these guys, these truckers, just bring it to a warehouse or to a train yard nearby, like 5 or 50 miles away from the port. They turn around, they pick up another container, and they go back. So it's a small part, but it's really crucial. It's a crucial little elbow of the supply chain.
And I imagine there's a lot of pressure on this part of the supply chain to deliver and deliver quickly.
Exactly, yeah, because it's between LA and Long Beach, it's the biggest port in the Western Hemisphere. And if they're not bringing it in, nobody else can really handle it. So all these new huge mega ships that are traveling around the globe can only fit really into these two ports on the West Coast. There's not really any other options for shippers. So as long as the stuff is coming, the stuff needs to get moved. And that's where these truckers come in.
Now let's meet these truckers. Tell us some of the stories you heard talking to them about what their work was like.
So what I've kind of heard from hundreds of guys, either through my interviews or through the testimony I listened to or read, was that they kind of were placed into this debt peonage system almost without a choice, right? 10 years ago, they were handed a contract. It wasn't explained. It wasn't translated. They couldn't bring it home. And they found themselves in debt almost $100,000 to their boss for these new clean trucks before they had owned their own trucks. And since then, they'd been working sort of these crazy hours, anywhere between 16 and 20 hours a day. They didn't really have a choice. They can't go home a lot of times. Some bosses had actually locked their guys out of the parking lot at night and made them go back onto the road. Other guys have taken home pennies on the hour. Some guys, like I was saying, have come to owe their boss money. And at the end of it all, they're promised this truck, right? That's what the lease-to-own agreement is supposed to mean, that after 5 or 7 years, after you pay enough back to us, we'll give you the title. But what we found were hundreds of guys who were fired or had to quit, starved out of their truck, people call it. And they could get fired for anything, for going to a funeral, for getting sick, for needing maintenance that they couldn't afford. Really anything could put them back out into the street, and they would lose the truck and the tens of thousands of dollars they'd paid into it. So it was often an empty promise.
So let me walk through this just to make sure I have it right. If I'm one of these truckers, I had to sign this contract, and I'm working as a contractor, in effect, not an employee. The company has this truck. I get the use of the truck, but I'm in debt all of a sudden. It's deducted from what I'm getting paid for them every day. And if any time in that 5 to 7 years they decide to fire me, no matter how much I've put into the payment toward that truck, it's gone. The company has it. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. We found that through going, digging into these really deep, complicated contracts that they had. The company retained the right, really at any point, to fire you and take the whole thing. Take the truck, take your payments. And that kind of happened over and over again, we saw with these guys.
Talking to Brett Murphy from the USA Today Network, an investigative reporter talking about his piece, Rigged, on people who are a lifeline of the transport system that gets goods to you name it, Amazon, JCPenney's, all points in between, and the working and debt conditions they work under. And Brett, let's get to the working conditions now. That situation with the trucks, you write, gives the companies who hire these truckers a lot of leverage. What do they then demand from their truckers on a day-to-day basis?
So what that means is pretty much at any point, a trucker has to do whatever their dispatch or whatever their boss is saying, because if they don't, they have this sort of threat of, well, you won't get work again tomorrow, or you won't get work for the rest of the week. And if you don't get work tomorrow, if you don't work for the week, then you can't make the payments. Then you're going home with nothing, or you're going home in the red, actually owing your boss money. So what they do with that sort of leverage is make guys work anywhere between 16 and 20 hours a day. And federal regulations mandate that you can only work 11 hours a day. And then we saw some cases where dispatchers were showing guys how to doctor their logbooks. They were withholding checks until guys doctored their logbooks. And when they're working, they can't take breaks and walk away from their truck. So a lot of the guys are going to the bathroom right in their cabs. They're not stopping to eat, and they're just working around the clock and around the clock, 100, 120 hours a week. And they have no choice often to take really low-paying jobs. So sometimes there'll be a job that, after all the expenses for the trip, it won't pay anything, but they have no choice but to take it. So a lot of the times they find themselves working for free, as one called it in court.
And I guess people would ask, why do they keep doing this? Why do they stay in this job? Is it partly in the hopes of keeping that equity they've put into the truck?
Yeah, that's what I kept hearing, because it was a question I would ask, right, is, hey, if it's so bad, you know, you should leave, right? Like, shouldn't you get a new job? So the first thing they say is, well, no, I'm already 2 years in. I'm already 3 years in. I just have to stick it out a little longer, and then I'll own the thing. That's sort of the conception around the whole industry, and that's why guys stick around. Other than that, it's sort of embedded culturally. A lot of these guys, 90-plus percent, are immigrants from Central and South America. They have very low education, low English skills. They've been trucking for most of their lives, so they don't really know any other work. So if they were to quit, they would not only lose tens of thousands of dollars in the truck, they wouldn't have really anywhere else to go. You know, they can go flip burgers or something, but this is all they know. This is all they've ever known.
You talked to some of the people who ran these companies that hire these contractors, and you tried to talk to many more. What kind of things did you hear?
Well, they said, listen, you know, a decade ago, we got this new regulation dropped on us. This is a historically deregulated industry. There's very little rules telling trucking company owners how to run their business. Then all of a sudden, out there in California, they said, no more dirty trucks. They dropped on this environmental regulation. Companies were scrambling, and this was right at the turn of the economy, right? So things were tanking anyway. Company owners had to stay above water, and this was the best way they knew how to do it. They said, this is the way we're going to stay in business so our truckers can stay in business. And they also point to a lot of guys who have been successful. They say, listen, you found a lot of guys who it didn't work out for. Those guys aren't the diligent, industrious, hard workers like we have over here. Come look at these happy truckers who are able to own their truck, who make good money. So they kind of, you know, divert the conversation somewhere else. And they'll also say, you know, this is largely a union organizing campaign. You found guys that were propped up by the Teamsters because all the Teamsters are looking for is to get more employees down to the port so they can have more members. So they kind of have three arguments, and it's the same stuff I heard over and over.
And have a lot of these cases gone to courts? Have workers challenged these rules and the debt situation?
Yeah, so that's kind of where most of my reporting came in, was through the California Labor Commissioner. It's an arm of the Department of Labor out there in California, a state agency, as well as the civil court system. And through that, in my own interviews, I was able to find almost 1,200 guys who have stepped forward. And through their complaints, through their testimony, I heard all these stories. And in over 97% of those cases, the judges or hearing officers sided on the case of the driver. They said the driver is right here. And what the driver was arguing there wasn't about these specific instances that we uncovered with the story. What they were arguing was that they weren't actually independent contractors this whole time. They were employees, and they were getting fleeced from their pay. So all these deductions, which ranged everything from the lease payments to insurance to, in some cases, office toilet paper to drug testing to parking, anything the company owner wanted. All these deductions were illegal because I was an employee, so I shouldn't have had to pay them. And the judges every time have said, yes, this company exerted enough control over you that you are an employee, and you shouldn't have been paying those things. You were paying for the cost of the equipment that really should have been borne by the company owner.
We're talking to Brett Murphy right now. He's an investigative reporter for the USA Today Network. His investigative piece, Rigged, looks at the conditions faced by port truckers in the Los Angeles area.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the conditions facing these workers? If you're a trucker, have you faced similar issues with the companies you have worked for? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Right now, we're picking up the conversation about the conditions facing port truckers in Los Angeles with Brett Murphy. He's an investigative reporter for the USA Today Network. His most recent piece is a year-long investigation into the poor working conditions facing port truckers in Los Angeles.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about how all of this works? The debt that these truckers find themselves in and the conditions they work under. If you work in the industry, maybe you haven't worked in the port area of Los Angeles, but have you felt pressured by an employer or someone you contract for to doctor the logbooks, to work longer than regulations allow? And if you're a contractor, is there a shady deal with financing your truck via your employer? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Brett, we've talked about the truckers you talk to, the companies who employ them. You also went to the retailers who ultimately use the products they carry on their store shelves or in their online store warehouses. What kind of things did you hear from them?
Yeah, so we'll be doing some follow-up pieces about this idea specifically. But for this first story, it was one of the questions we brought to them, right? We said, hey, this is what we found out. We've been reporting down your supply chain down there in L.A. and Long Beach. What do you think about all this? Do you know about it? And most of the time, they didn't want to talk. We got no commented. And the reason they gave was that they were like, hey, listen, it's on our supply chain, but it's a contractor of a subcontractor of a subcontractor, and it's not really our position to be policing the labor practices of those American businesses. They have pretty strict corporate responsibility and codes of conduct for their manufacturing plants overseas, but here stateside, they don't seem to apply those same sort of standards. And when I asked them if they perform audits at the places here stateside like they do overseas, a lot of them said either they don't know or that they don't. They didn't seem to think that it was within their realm of responsibility to be policing those places.
We heard from Linda on Facebook who writes, this is a reason we need governmental oversight of industries. What kind of oversight is there, did you find, of these trucking companies?
Well, there used to be back before 1980 when there was regulations all over the trucking industry. But ever since they moved to an independent contractor model, pretty much no labor laws apply, right? These guys aren't employees. They're not guaranteed minimum wage. They don't have OSHA protections. They don't really have any of the things most of us consider take for granted in the workplace. And that's largely because everything has moved to an independent contractor model. And that's why they thought that they were being safe with these lease agreements. They thought, hey, we're just helping these contractors stay in business. And as long as we offer them enough freedoms to move around and to still be their own business, then we'll be safe from any sort of litigation. But what they have found out and what these contracts really did was tie guys to one employer. They could not take that truck and go work for somebody else. That came up case after case after case.
Right, they have non-compete clauses basically, right?
It pretty much, either directly through the contract or through the insurance policies that they also provide for the driver, you can't really take that thing and go work for somebody else. And even if you think you might be able to, most of the drivers I talked to and listened to said it wasn't a possibility. They didn't have that real option, and they were able to be convincing enough of that fact at the labor commissioner in court that it held up.
We'll go to our callers now. Jay is with us in Appleton. Jay, hi.
Hi. I wanted to say thank you for taking my call. I am not a trucker. However, I work with the small business sector, and I've been speaking with small business owners, including truckers and trucking companies, for many years. I'm curious about a couple things. Well, and I had a couple of comments as well, and I don't want to take up too much time, but it seems to me, and I was very intrigued by the newspaper articles that I read first, but then second, I wanted to commend the reporter for being an investigative reporter and then not only investigating but also doing a really great a really great job with the flip side of the story also. My first question would be, who can we contact to start boycotting the industry? Was my first thought when I was reading the newspaper article. But then some other thoughts kind of struck me, in that I don't believe that this issue is isolated to port truckers by any means. I think it's an across the U.S.-wide issue. I also would have to say, having spoken with many immigrant business owners, people who are legitimately U.S. citizens who have businesses, who have limited English resources and aren't that familiar with business law or cornered markets for insurance, et cetera, are absolutely taken advantage of.
And Jay, I'm going to jump in. That gave us plenty to work with there. Let's start with that first point, Brett, which was she's wondering about consumer pressure. Would that make a difference?
I'm not sure. I think it's important now that the retailers and that the customers and clients, those being the companies who are importing these goods, are more aware of what's going on in their supply chain, certainly. And if they're hearing it from their customers in addition to the reporting, then that, raises awareness as well. I wouldn't know what groups to reach out to or anything like that. But she also, Jay also mentioned a really good point here. All of these guys working at the port are legal residents. I heard from a lot of readers afterwards that they were undocumented or illegal immigrants anyway, so labor law shouldn't apply to them regardless. But it's an important point to make that if you're working at the port, you need what's called a TWIC card, and you need to have valid credentials for that, valid documents. So that's a really important point to make. And she also said that these lease-to-own agreements and these really bad contracts aren't limited to the port. And I think she's absolutely right about that. Since we published, I've heard from truckers all over the country, all over different sectors of the industry, telling me that they've seen them, they've run across these contracts, and they're never really a good deal. And they've been worked over on the kind of more desperate population of truck drivers, and companies use them to kind of exploit their drivers all over the place.
Jay, thanks for the call. We're talking to Brett Murphy from USA Today Network about his series Rigged on working conditions facing port drivers in Los Angeles. Back to our callers. Paul is with us in Wisconsin now. Paul, hi.
Hi, how are you? I'm a truck driver myself, and this just turns my stomach to think that this is actually happening. We are very regulated. I work for a respectable company. The previous caller was right. This is not just a port issue, and the report is right, too. This is a national issue. They get these guys in these contracts that are just impossible to actually pay, what they call lease-to-own programs. But the point I'm trying to make is that we are very regulated. I have electronic logs. I'm limited to what I can do. Now, these port guys, some of them do have different, they are at different levels. And depending on, if you're at a local level, sometimes the law can go up to 16 hours you can work, as long as you don't go out of a certain radius. I just want to clarify that. But the whole thing is, in general, is just sickening to my stomach. We have a hard enough time trying to get respect out here, because what we do is a very hard job, and it's a very lonely job.
Paul, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate you bringing your perspective. Brett, Paul, appalled by this and not a lot of respect. I think Paul mentioning the local aspect of it. We think of the over-the-road truck drivers who are doing interstate runs. These people you're talking to are really under the radar, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, for a lot of reasons. Most of them don't speak English. They all wanted to stay local and not be long-haul guys, to be closer to their family. Central and South Americans have very close familial ties, and they need to be nearby. But even though they live so close, maybe only an hour or two away, these guys work so much that they still sleep in their cab. So they'll be working 20 hours a day, and we did a run with a guy who would just do a 4 hours sleeping in the back of his truck while parked in the company lot, get back up 5 hours later, and go back to work. And even though they're just doing local runs, it's all interstate laws apply to them because those goods are moving all around the country. So they're only supposed to be driving really for 11 hours, only supposed to be working for 14 with a 10-hour break. But they have to push it either because the company is making them or because they need to make enough money just to pay back that weekly debt.
Thanks for the call, Paul. Time for one more caller. Jackie is with us in Slinger. Jackie, hi.
Hi. I am also a trucker, and I just wanted to echo what the other two said about what we call in the industry fleece owner operators, because those contracts are all designed to fleece the truck driver. We're told, if you want to have a truck, you go outside of your company to buy the truck. Never sign a lease agreement because you basically become slave labor. And you see this, when it's over the road, they'll be stuck out 4-6 months at a time. They can't go home because if they go home, the wheels ain't turning, they ain't making no money, the lease payment don't get made. Big cities, you're going to see people from India, Pakistan, Eastern Europe, like in Chicago. That's going to be a lot of the local traffic down there.
Jackie, I got to jump in because we're just about out of time. But Brett, we've heard from a couple people, this isn't just the port area. Are you going to be expanding to look at trucking elsewhere in the country?
You know, certainly. You know, what was unique always about the port area there in California was that spark of the environmental regulation that kind of overnight told every single immigrant independent contractor down there they can no longer use their own truck. That's why they went so quickly in lockstep so many companies, at least 140, into this same exact model. I'm sure it's in other places, and that's where we're going to be looking next, I think.
We'll leave it there for now. Brett, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you guys so much.
That's Brett Murphy, investigative reporter for the USA Today Network. Thanks to him and to you for your calls. Brett recently wrote a piece titled Rigged, which looks at the poor working conditions facing port drivers in Los Angeles, many of whom are effectively indebted to their companies for their trucks. You can read that piece. We have it linked on the Central Time Facebook page. And if you have a story to share, if you've been a part of this industry or connected to it in one way or another, we'd like to hear from you. Have you experienced something like this, or do you work in a company that really avoids this kind of situation, this kind of setup? Again, read Brett Murphy's article. You can check that out at the Central Time Facebook page.